Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Busy day.
Busy day, busy week. So we're actually back on Friday just to time stamp this. And this time we're able to record this post payrolls data, so we have a lot to discuss. Let's kind of dive right in. What's your biggest takeaways? Obviously, this has been pretty big moves in fixed income and equities, particularly, and some people saying a bit of a sea change in kind of the fight against inflation and interest rates in general.
So let's first talk about the NFP. I mean, the issue in the headline number was, of course, the impact of the strike and more broadly, the impact of a category of workers or data that never gets any attention, but this month is important. They are called not at work the survey week, but otherwise employed. And strikers are part of that. The problem with this data, it exists only for a short period of time. So you can't do a seasonal adjustment. The data is not seasonally adjusted, so you can't do a seasonal adjustment. So there is a little bit of uncertainty of how important it was. And it's part of the household survey data, which is lower quality than the NFP data. So to me, this screams noise. I will, of course, go into the nitty-gritty and do my best in my review of the NFP to get at a reasonable estimate. But and I suspect I will end up not very far from what the headline estimate was, about 30K decrease in automotive employment compared with last month, against an increase of about 10,000 a month for the past 3 4 months. So a bit muddled, but in terms of unemployment, we are up another 10 basis points. And in terms of wage growth, that is the biggest surprise, below expectations. So the year-on-year wage growth seems to be stabilizing. But the mystery, of course, is all these stories we read and the objective data about strikes, and nothing happens to wages. And
Right.
I think the explanation is one, union density is low in America, so strikes are unusual, but unusual relative to a very low baseline. And also the transmission of the wage increases takes time. Like you've had, increase in wages of a 25-30% automotive sector, UPS, other agreements we haven't heard about because they are too small. These take time to work their way into the data.
Okay, do
So
you don't think it's a question that, this is like a big media thing, but in reality, the actual number of people that are benefiting from unionization, enhanced higher wages is small? Or is it more just it will come through, but it just takes, there's a lag?
I think it's actually a combination
Okay.
of both. But there is a broader issue. Remember, about a month and a half ago, I wrote a note asking, signaling that you might have an air pocket in October because of the repayments, of the restart of the repayments of student loan, the tax payments, the strike, a possible government shutdown. So there is a question of, is this data, because we also got weaker than expected ISM services, is this the air pocket that's showing up? I'm not sure. Again, I will, go through the data with great care. I mean, 30,000 fewer people employed because of the strikes. That's probably an overestimate because this is the 30,000 who were not counted during the survey week for the NFP. Otherwise, they still have their job. In fact, the union played its strategy beautifully by getting wage increases without getting people fired or people losing a lot of income. Look, I was looking at high frequency indicators, and I'm not, like the number of air traffic passengers, the credit card receipts, restaurant bookings. I mean, if there is one thing that's not falling in America, it's people going out to eat. Or even the tax payment. I've been saying forever that people are not paying enough attention to the tax relief that was granted to taxpayers in California and other states that allowed them to postpone their tax payment from mid-April to mid-October. Now, finally, the Treasury and the CBO are talking about it, but I've looked at the Treasury cash receipts and I'm not seeing evidence of a huge increase in tax receipt last month. So that's next on my research docket, but I would say it's possible, that we have hit an air pocket, but the data evidence doesn't seem to be obvious. I mean, as always, I reserve to ch the right to change my mind based on a closer examination of the data. So I'd say this print very noisy, possibly reflecting the air pocket I had expected. I'm not sure. I'm going to crunch the data and see if there is anything there.
And then, and obviously we heard from the Fed this week. What was your big takeaway on that? Were you surprised by anything that Jay Powell said?
No, it was completely in line with my expectations, and I think the market got again a little bit ahead of its skis, so to speak. So let's start with what's clear. QT unchanged, as I expected. And they expected to run it well, into next year and beyond. Powell said reserves are not at the point of scarcity. Another project on my research docket, by the way. I always like to look at the data. The second thing he said about, financial conditions, yeah, they can impact the Fed funds trajectory, but they have to be sustainable. The tightening of financial condition has to be permanent, and the increase in long-term yields has to reflect an increase in the term premium rather than an increase in expectation of a future Fed funds rate. Now we know what happened to that, to the FCI after after Powell's comment. And again, I mean, this story about FCI has been debated in the Fed for more than 20 years, for as long as I can remember. And there is a very, very well argued speech by Jeremy Stein, 2014, then Fed governor, went back to Harvard. This was his valedictorian speech, where he said the Fed should more or less ignore financial conditions or ignore them as long as they don't impact in growth in a way that is clear, because of the feedback loop between forward guidance and financial conditions. And we just saw that play. And I suspect that, the reference to financial conditions, both in the speech and in the presser, was for Chair Powell to recognize the concern of his committee members. Because one of the issues he has is that the administration has been appointing, dovish, very dovish. So you have this Kugler, the new governor, then you have Philip Jefferson, who is now the vice chair. And I suspect that Chair Powell is now a little bit on the hawkish side relative to the median on his committee. So he cannot not acknowledge their concern, but for sure he must be aware of this debate, and he must have read the Stein speech. So, and then the thing about future rate hikes, and I'm always surprised by everybody being surprised, or rather ignoring what Powell said, which was, you know, if inflation is not on a sustainable trajectory to go back to the target, which, I mean, I would interpret as a PCE, core PCE headed to the 2.6% Q4 on Q4 for next year, that is in the SCPs, and we will have to hike more, which is, you know, it's a central banker telling you that if inflation is higher than they want, they will tighten more. I mean, to me, there is no mystery, nothing surprising. And in my review, I just lifted straight from the presser. And by the way, there were parts in the presser that were a bit ambiguous, especially since the transcription services didn't work as well. So I will go back to the cleaned up transcript once it's available. But to me, there is no mystery. I mean, you are a central banker, you have unemployment that is below your estimate of long-term unemployment, inflation is above target. If inflation doesn't slow down, you have to hike more. So I don't think there is anything revolutionary or shocking here. And it all comes down to the trajectory of inflation. And based on what I've seen so far of the data today, I'm not changing my view that inflation is likely to prove sticky because growth is likely to remain above potential.
Okay. And then for the December meeting, what are you giving the chances for a hike there?
So I'm still thinking a hike, but less so, obviously, after this morning's data. So where I was, maybe 65-2/3 chance of a hike. Now I'm more around 55%, 60 subjective probability. So my conviction has been dented, because I cannot ignore the data, but not fundamentally changed.
Right. Okay, cool. All right. So on that, let's segue to the data next week, or any speeches, any events that you feel are critical.
Cool. So interestingly enough, we have a speech from Chair Powell on Wednesday, and I wonder whether he might take the opportunity to correct market perception of his policy views. So that's definitely the one to watch. Otherwise, Logan is also speaking. And again, it will be interesting to see her comments on the loosening of financial conditions. And I mean, what market participants have to realize that for each decline in the FCI, it, of course, increases the chance of a rate hike in December. Anyway, so, and the other interesting event is we have the successor of Esther George, so a perma hawk at the Kansas City Fed, who is giving his maiden speech. I expect him to be a bit on the hawkish side, but it will be interesting to listen to him. Otherwise, in terms of data, I think, you know, everybody will be very happy. This is a data light week, so hopefully we can all catch our breath. But we have the University of Michigan, which I think is probably the most important event of the week. And there I will be focused on inflation expectations. The Fed, you know, trademark sentence is inflation expectations are well anchored. We've seen a surge in 1 year. I mean, one of my jokes is that the only people in America who know what inflation expectations are and who have a precise estimate of inflation expectation are the respondent to the University of Michigan survey. It's only half a joke. I mean, people have a vague notion of what's going on in the economy and when the price that they pay at the pump to fill their car goes up, their inflation expectations typically go up. We see it in the survey. So gas prices have been constant. Let's see the past month. Let's see if that has impacted the short-term inflation expectations in the UMISH survey. So we have that. Then we have consumer credit, which is not moving much, but something to track because it shows, I mean, the increase in consumer borrowing is one reason the savings rate is falling. So not a lot of volatility there, but something to keep track of for the big picture. Otherwise, the trade balance that seems to be improving. I'm not, you know, again, not a super exciting data. And of course, our weekly claims, you know, that continue to be very consistent with a tight labor market. So hopefully, nothing there to upset the proverbial apple cart. Perhaps the more interesting data will be the noises coming from Congress, where we are discovering the leadership style of the new House Speaker. And of course, we all want to know if he will come up with a CR that's acceptable to the Democrats or not. So far, the signs are not very encouraging. Last week, he put to the vote funding of the Ukraine war and funding for Israel tied to other measures unacceptable to the Democrats. So Chuck Schumer, the Senate majority leader, has already announced it would be dead on arrival. So let's see how far Speaker Johnson is, you know, prepared to indulge his more right-wing base and right. Trigger a conflict with the White House and a shutdown. I will be updating.
What was the main issue that it was tied to?
Cutting funding, extra funding to the IRS, reinforcing border protection. Actually, the border protection thing is such a amorphous, such a vague thing that I could see scope for agreement between Democrats and Republicans. But I think on both sides, it's about theatrics, showing the base that you love them. So they are going to, you know, use very inflammatory language. But at the end of the day, they have to agree to something because shutting the government has never been a vote winner for the Republican Party. So let's see. Who knows? Reason might prevail. Stranger things have happened before.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. And as we like to do, we'll go through few of the key pieces this past week. So Mirzabeg and the EM team have flipped. So I guess as we always like to say, you know, we're open. We don't have to have a house view. Everyone, you know, we tried to put together a kind of a first in class team across the board of researchers. Mears and the team at EM have looked to go bullish EMFX. So a few pieces on that. Interesting, I'm just looking through the China growth tracker that just is coming out today, is actually showing that property transactions are starting to improve somewhat, which is quite interesting. For people who want to check out what we do on the pro side, a good thing may be an opportunity this week to listen to the podcast. Because the podcast this week, we're actually sharing, we're calling it a treat, terrible pun with Halloween.
No trick.
No trick. It's definitely a treat, hopefully, that people see it that way. This is our new weekly professional kind of researcher call that we have every Wednesday that clients can kind of call into and ask questions to. And it really gives an opportunity for, say, between 4 to 5 of the researchers a chance to talk on their key issues and topics for that they're following. So I would definitely recommend listening to our podcast this week. Other stuff, looking at how long the CNY shadow intervention, that was kind of a cool piece. We closed some of our kind of bullish dollar trades. So we're definitely kind of reducing risk on like the much, much higher kind of US yields and stronger dollar view for some of the researchers. And then, yeah, just some different pieces. The Global Rates Weekly was a very interesting piece by Henry and Richard, asking the question, when will the Eurozone disinflation trend turn, and will it turn? Model portfolio, FX carry been probably the one of the best model strategies across the board. And yeah, tons of other stuff, a rash on oil. So as we always say, you know, it's we love to hear feedback, particularly actually on the from our pro clients on the weekly calls. We've been getting some very interesting feedback, a lot really positive, but also just like super helpful too, because our goal is really nothing else but to do is to be the most impactful for our clients. So I don't know, Dominique, any parting words?
Absolutely. So on the no has you. It's really important for us because, you know, we are an organization that works on an aristocracy of ideas. Let the best idea win. And I would also add that an economic and strategic view are two different things, and they are more complementary than substitute, to use terribly boring economist language. But the bottom line is, I can't see of a reason to change my mind, but obviously I'm not the market, and my colleagues who do strategy pay more attention to the market than I do. Right. And they are just very good at picking up signals, and you know, they do their work independently. I have enormous respect for what they do. And you know, sometimes we go in diverging directions. We tend to converge to the same point, but it can take time. Markets can do diverge from fundamentals.
Yeah. Those are great points, and even kind of reinforce what you're saying. We can often have a different time frame too, and I think that's really. For you, sure, in the short term, maybe the market misinterprets, maybe there's data that gets revised, maybe, you know, Chair Powell or other central bankers communicated something that wasn't, you know, what we believe really was their full intention, and the markets can react. And our goal is to have a combination to help our clients to make better kind of short-term, but also medium, long-term decisions and general kind of frameworks of thinking. So yeah, good luck, everyone. We can say like, have a great weekend, and yeah, all the best.